What's up, guys? This is Cody with the Do Work Podcast. What is going on? Here with some schmucks, as always.
One of them being Gerald.
I'm not a schmuck.
You are a schmuck.
I am not a
you
schmuck.
You are the king schmuck.
Define schmuck right now.
Brandon Williams.
Crap. That's what it
Walked
says.
Walked right into that one.
Yeah.
It's too early for that.
It says of the shaking of the tukus and Brandon Williams. Schmuck.
Crap.
Yeah.
Yep. Literally it, right there. Urban Dictionary.
Yep. So what have you guys been up
to? What do you mean literally right there? You like pointed at the wall like I had a dictionary, and I do not, as a matter of fact.
You need to learn how to read between the lines. It's in subtext.
Oh, it's just right over there on the wall. Yeah, yeah. See, you wrote it in red crayon earlier today.
That's right.
I appreciate you doing that.
You're welcome. Yeah. Look, man, magic eraser. I use it for my kids.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
You're going to have to stock up. If you keep having me and Cody come over.
I keep letting you guys show up. Yeah. Is that really weird, like, brown spots I keep finding all over the floor?
Usually.
Yes. Okay.
Right. I wouldn't smell them.
I was worried. Yep. I was worried about what those were, but, you know, I feel better now.
Yeah. We're barely house trained.
Gerald's actually out on the balcony by himself.
That's right.
It's probably cold out there, yep. But, you know, you let him in sometimes.
Yeah, they got a choke chain on me. Really weird.
It's weird.
Yeah, that's how they get me off my soapboxes.
Yep. So, gentlemen, what's Brandon been up to?
You know. Working.
Living the different crew life now.
Living the life.
You got moved off B-shift, bro.
I was brutally ripped. Ripped from my people.
Yeah,
and placed into a foreign land. But it's okay, because they will be my people soon.
Soon.
I'm just growing my empire.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're spreading yourself.
I'm spreading the schmuckery.
That's good. We need more schmucks.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if we do, actually.
Oh, yeah. Gerald, how's business been with coronavirus?
I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
No, it's all going good, man. I work for a great company, man. They're really taking precautions that both protect their employees and also still take care of the customer. And we're considered critical infrastructure because, you know, fire truck breaks, you kind of need to get it fixed.
Oh, yeah.
So,
Gerald, you're critical.
You're
critical
essential.
Infrastructure. Essential.
You're essential.
Critical infrastructure. Yeah. Basically the best.
The best ever. The best. You're going to be the best infrastructure possibly ever.
Your company's very bigly.
Very bigly.
How long are we going to keep doing this?
It's set in stone. It's just part of New Work now.
Yeah.
No, it's been going great. For all the listeners that don't know, I left my former fire department. So moved on from that. Working on a bunch of personal stuff, all of that stuff. Corrected a lot of it. And one of the biggest things that I did here recently was started walking true back with the Lord. So
it's huge, man.
Amen.
So, and I was lost, and, you know, he spoke to me after prayer. I was in a bad place, man. And I didn't need that stuff in my life anymore. I needed to get rid of that stuff because I needed to work on the relationship with him first.
Yeah, so, and how's life now?
It's great.
Awesome, man. That's awesome.
You know, let go of all that burden, and I think I'll be a firefighter again, but probably not for that place.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's in God's hands. He'll work it out.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. So,
anyway, that's what's been up with Gerald. I'm not a fireman. Still a scumbag salesman. Still get to deal with me.
Oh, yeah.
So, you're welcome.
Got a new fire truck coming.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Yeah.
We saw pictures of it.
Gerald, so. Where's my fire truck?
We're
getting
Gerald, ready for it.
It's where, almost there, bro.
Where is it, Gerald?
She,
I need it.
Yeah. She just finished a final inspection.
So. Have you spun up the queue?
Yeah. I have not. But I'm telling you, from the interstate all the way to
all the
doorstep of Pampa, I'm just going to send that cue siren.
I would while I'm so driving do over. That. Yeah. Just in the middle of nowhere, like that 30 miles between wherever, Highway 7, or coming up Highway 70 from the interstate, I would be just full pickle.
You boys like Mexico!
I'd be ramping that.
Yeah. You guys, it will be glowing red.
Dude.
By the time.
I can't wait to hear a distant cue I hope I'm on duty. And I just peek outside the door, and I'm like, I hear a Q in the distance.
Yeah. You're like, it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, I can't wait, man. And then it sounds like you guys will get the second one as well. So
looking forward to it, man.
I mean, two new pumpers in 1 year. It's going to be sweet.
That's pretty awesome. It'll be pretty awesome.
You guys did some really good stuff to them to make them really easy to work out of. So.
Oh, roll up doors.
Can't wait, man.
It's going to be sweet.
Yeah.
Anyway, ladies and gentlemen.
Wait. What about you?
Oh.
You coward.
Just doing my stuff, man.
What is stuff?
Training my guys.
Oh, there's that.
Murdering them. I guess I was let known that I have a look about me.
I can't believe we kept that under the table for so long.
Styles let it out of the box. He was like, oh, he's got that look, guys. That look. He's going to kill us. He's going to kill us. But no, it was we did some good stuff, and they enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, and of course schmucks.
They enjoyed it.
Yeah, y'all go. Oh well, we made it a little harder for you because you're the captain.
Oh
yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah, that stuff.
Okay, we did.
Yeah.
So I made him go through a chair.
I made like a simple little drill.
Oh, is that what you guys went to do? Oh. Wait, I was there for that one.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about a different one.
No, we built the Palmer house.
Oh, that's last right. Day on. I hate you.
Yeah. So we're going to burn that baby down. It's going to be sweet.
You guys.
Yeah. Other than that, man, just dealing with this coronavirus crap, stuff coming down from the administration, and trying to be that liaison of, like, my guys are telling me, this is stupid. And I'm like, okay. But understand where they're coming from, too.
Yeah.
Kind of guy, you know.
Being the filter.
It sucks. It's different. But so far, pretty good. No complaints.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
We have a solid guest that's been sitting here listening to our schmuckery.
It's been 7 minutes.
7 minutes of schmuckery.
That's pretty incredible.
And I cannot wait to introduce this guy, to have him introduce himself. And knowledge bombs from this dude. From leadership, from being a captain, some stuff that maybe I haven't thought about. Being up north, it's different from us down here.
Bigly different.
Bigly.
Bunch of Yankees.
But it's always great to have some insight coming from some of the big hitters in the fire service and bringing them here to our little community, our little part of the panhandle. And to all the listeners, I mean, you can't go to conferences right now, so you might as well listen to podcasts, man. You can always learn something from it, so. I am excited, and finally, we had our schedules aligned, so we could finally get this bad boy out. I know we've been talking for a while, but, ladies and gentlemen, we got Benjamin Martin. What's up, buddy?
Greetings from Virginia, guys. I don't deserve that lead-in. That was incredibly generous, so thank you. I'm very humbled, very excited to be doing this.
Man, we're glad we finally got you on. I know me and you have been talking for a while, and just with you teaching, it's awesome the way that you put your family first. We can all do that. We can all be better at doing that kind of stuff. It's inspiring, and just finally, our schedule aligns. Even though it's weird, usually do work is done at night so we can drink beer. But now we're drinking coffee, bro, and I kind of like it.
Hey, it's the greatest.
It's pretty cool.
It's the greatest coffee ever, okay?
That's right. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's right.
Bigly.
But anyway, buddy, what's going on up in Virginia?
Well, let me, I guess, run you down the bio a little bit. So, like you guys said, I'm a captain. I got promoted to that probably about 7 months ago, and I'm working along the learning curve that comes with any kind of promotion or different assignment that you get. I got put in charge of the Marine Patrol program, which is an amazing opportunity, and we do the swift water, we do Marine Patrol with the Port of Virginia, and I know nothing about boats, and I know nothing about swift water, so it's a perfect spot to be humbled constantly. But I've got tremendous folks, which makes that part of it really easy. So that's really exciting. Our department is about 600 folks. We run about 50,000 calls a year, and we've got an all-hazards approach. So we do a little bit of it all. My specific station's about 24 folks, and we've got an engine, and a fire medic, which we run ALS coverage on 24 hours a day. We cross staff, so we do it all and just kind of rotate around. I ride on all the pieces of equipment and kind of fill in some ancillary administration roles from time to time, and that's sexy, exciting stuff on that end.
So no marine, no boat experience. And they're like, hey, guess what? Why don't you come run these guys? You're like, ookie. So yeah. That's pretty cool, man. I mean, at least hopefully that wasn't like, hey, let's see if the schmuck can handle it, or if it was, hey, we've got a solid guy that we know he's going to be able to do this job.
That's what we hope for. No kidding, right? It'd probably be who you asked. I think, my specific spot, they've had 5 different captains in the last 6 years. And when you talk about, fire chiefs changing over, anytime somebody's rotating through leadership positions, it's exhausting. And it did not take long, just to look at the face of everyone working there, that they were just tired of having different expectations and a different level of work put on them. And I don't feel like they had a lot of support. I don't think communication was occurring either up or down the chain. So I think when those challenges were recognizable, they figured that somebody with more people skills than more boat skills was going to be appropriate. So I think that is why I got put there. But I'm hoping to stay there for a while. I really, really enjoy it, and I like the people that we've got. So we shall see, the magic crystal ball. And so,
yeah, well, as I mean, we spoke before we started recording, and just to give the listeners a heads up of who you are, I know we like to be humble in our profession, and we don't like to be like, hey, look what I've done. But it's my job whenever I'm on this podcast to make you have to do that. So I need you, Ben, to toot your own horn a little bit. You're doing some amazing stuff, bro, and it needs to be recognized. So instead of me just reading off the list or, going off what I wrote down from your – that was awesome, by the way. How you recorded that and sent that in. That was awesome. I'm probably going to start asking
for it. Very helpful. We're not very good at reading here. So
we can listen to it. Words are hard.
Words is very hardly.
Hardly.
Yeah. Well, if we don't, at some point, I hope we talk about the difference between emails and texts and phone calls. So when we get to that piece, hopefully it'll make more sense. And that may be even why you guys appreciated it that much more, because it's just so important. But to answer your question, so the other thing I do on the side is the Embrace Resistance, which is a website and a Facebook page and even a Facebook group where we kind of talk about leadership. And I started that, I think I started that in the state probably 4 years ago. And then I started when I found the courage to actually kind of put my opinions out on a larger page, because you know how critics just kind of lay in wait for stuff. I just had the sense the environment as well, because I've been told if I wanted to get promoted to captain, I was going to have to leave the speaking behind. I was going to have to shut the website down. And I said no. I told them it was something I was passionate about. And I found if that was what they needed from me, then I wasn't going to be a good fit for that. And it ended up working out anyway. It's just kind of funny how that does. Mm-hmm. But the goal of that thing is just to encourage people. And it's to write from a perspective that leadership is hard and leadership sucks, but it can be incredibly rewarding when it's done correctly and for the right reasons. And when I was going through some significant challenges, both personally and professionally, I could not find a lot of resources that really talked about the struggle. It only ever presented the arrived product, where we made the top of the mountain, how great the view was. So I wanted something that was authentic and relatable. And, that was just kind of the avenue we approached. And it does seem to be resonating. It's interesting, with the, we've got a couple programs, and the biggest one we do is the Intoxicated Leadership one. And it really is like a fundamental leadership class in my mind, because we talk about expectations, communication, feedback, coaching, management, leadership, all these interpersonal behaviors that you've got to be able to do as a leader. But really what it is, it's about feelings and emotions. So you can imagine, right? You can see Ray McCormick talk about hand lines, or you can come see Ben Martin talk about feelings, like what the audience size looks like. So it's been challenging to build it, but it's been really encouraging, because I think like this year, before all of the stuff that's happened recently, we were slated to go to FDIC and FRI and Firehouse Expo, and then a whole host of other stuff in North Carolina. I mean, we had probably 20 things lined up. So that's really cool. And like you mentioned, Cody, I mean, I'm I am probably very similar to you all. I'm the type A go-getter, all in. I don't want to do anything half-ass. And that has led me on more than one occasion, and way more than I'd like to admit, to walking down a path that has taken me towards a passion but away from my family. So, you know, you mentioned it, Cody. One of the reasons that it took us so long to do this is because I try to be very protective of my evening time, because I get distracted, and like being on your phone is just terrible for your children. And I've got an 8 and a 6-year-old. And then when I'm at work, I try to be available to those folks, and not allowing side hustles or anything like that to come into play, because I've worked for those bosses and it's miserable. It's absolutely miserable. So that leaves very little time throughout the day to get all this stuff. So I appreciate your persistence. I'm super excited, and I hope we can offer something of value to some folks.
Oh, yeah, man. And you've got like the Fireground Commander Conference, and you're doing awesome things in the fire service, man. And...
Well, thank you. That I guess we could talk about that briefly, because I had to reschedule it. It's just one of the many passion projects that got sucked up in this thing. That started, and I say this to encourage people. Right? I went to a big conference, and it was one of my first times speaking, which is the only reason I could even go, because I love these big conferences. But if you're traveling from a distance and you're staying in a big city, it's expensive.
Oh yeah.
And not a lot of people have $3,000 and $4,000 to take a trip out. Now, I would argue that the networking and the experience and the vendors and the classes, it's all worth it. But when you're a small department and that is your yearly training budget, you can't send just one person out there. So I came back and I approached our fire chief at the time and said, hey, like, I can build this, right? I'm networking with these speakers. A lot of them are my friends. I can ask them for favors to come in cheap. I can bring you 5 or 6 speakers. We'll present classroom sessions over, you know, 3 days. We're not going to split them. Like, I want you to be able to come and not have to choose between 2 great people. I want you to be able to see who you came to see. And then, like, I think we could do it, you know, if we got some sponsorship, and we'd do it for $100. And if we got the right sponsorship, I think we could even do it for free. And the answer was an emphatic no thanks, which was amazing to me. I'm like, second largest department in the state, and this isn't going to cost you anything. I told you I'd run it. I'd plan it. And I can find people to volunteer their time, and you're not interested? And he said, yeah. I said, does that mean that I can't do it? And he's like, no. It's kind of like a child going to a father, and you're like, dad, I'm going to ride my bike 5 miles. And you're like, yeah, son, go ahead. You know, make me proud. And I don't think he thought I was going to do it. So we did it. And then the second year, I came back to him, and I'm like, hey, you know, proof of concept, 130 folks. You know, you interested? Nope. Okay. And I didn't even ask the second time. Yep. And we're doing it. And then we had 160 folks. And then the third year, same thing, not interested. And we have 250 people registered. So, you know, I say that, and if you talk with anybody that's doing these local conferences, whether it's MAFSE or what Cody and those guys are doing, there's always this resistance, whether it's from admin or sponsors or even people internally. It's amazing how giving the fire service is, how compassionate we are to other folks. And then when it comes to our own, it's like, I think I heard it put best one way. It's like we're all thrown into a pot of boiling water and we're crabs. And one of us has successfully climbed to the top of the pot and is getting ready to get out of the terrible situation they're in. And somebody reaches up and grabs him and pulls him right back down. And we all suffer the same fate. And that's anything. We have this extreme sense of fairness that, like, we've got to placate. And this conference is no exception. It's amazing. I've never spoken at it. I never intend to. It's not about me. My name's not on the conference. Like, we don't market any of the Embrace Resistance stuff. And I get all this pushback from people, you know, about, like, I did this thing the second year, and the boss that I worked for at the time pulled me aside, and he actually downgraded me on my performance appraisal, like my professional work appraisal, because of the conference. And I said, you realize I do this on my own time and at my own expense? And he's like, that's just how I feel. And I'm like, perfect. And so that's the kind of crap you're going through. So I don't want to discourage anybody. I think you should. Like, you can never have enough of these conferences. Just be realistic, and that, you know, and like many things in leadership, you're not going to be celebrated for things that are obvious. And planning training and hosting training that benefits your areas, that's an obvious thing that needs to occur. So just know they're laying in wait, and I'm always available if anybody needs a little bit of encouragement or help get that started.
Man, that's solid. I liked the analogy there. For for our first rabbit hole, ladies and gentlemen, I think we should dive a little deeper into that one. I see that happen all the time, man. I see where if it comes from administration, if it comes from other guys on your crew, if it comes from whoever in your fire department, but if you're succeeding in an area and you're doing well and you're trying to educate and you're trying to train other people, there's always those folks who, I don't know if they see it as a threat, if they see it as like, this guy's looking better than me, I need to now bust his chops and bring him down to my level, or what it is, but they're always there. What do you think?
Oh yeah. And they're always gonna, and it won't be about the subject, because they know when they're defeated. So if you're very passionate, if you're very solid on something that you're pushing forward, you're looking for change in, or maybe you're having a lot of success in, they're not gonna challenge you on that topic. They never will. They don't have enough gumption to actually take you on in that subject field, because they know they're going to lose and that they know you have movement. So what they'll do is they'll try to find a character flaw or something you did wrong, or maybe a piece of paperwork you didn't fill out, and they'll attack you that way. So that way they can try to kill your credibility in other places, so hopefully they drag you down that way, is what I've noticed personally. I don't know, it may vary for everybody. But what he was just talking about, you know, for somebody to come up and... I can sympathize, because I've had something similar happen to me about performance appraisals. But the personal courage that it takes for somebody to look somebody like that in the face and be like, that's fine, you can do this, but just know that I know. And I understand what's going on here, but you're not going to drag me down because of it. So that's pretty inspiring.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the way that I see it, is I think the reason that we've got guys who try to stunt growth for whatever reasons, because if you look at it, the fire service is it's very easy for us to be competitive with each other, especially because we see the job as such a privilege, yeah. And that you understand that you are one of select few people that get to do this job, and we all think it's the greatest job on the face of the earth, like hands down. And that being said, I think it is threatening to us when we detect that somebody might be better at us at one or two or 20 aspects of our job, is because I suddenly feel, well, this guy's better than me. And while I might not be in danger of like losing my job over it, there's still that kind of instinctual reaction that I have on my side, you know, where I'm like, oh, this guy's better than me, you know, and suddenly my, not only my career, but my lifestyle is being threatened now, because firemen, it is truly a lifestyle that you live, right? And while I would argue that it should not be all of your lifestyle, it is a large chunk of it.
Oh yeah.
Right. And so if I'm trucking along and I feel like I'm doing okay, and suddenly this rookie hires and he's freaking amazing at something, then I mean, naturally, I think everyone initially experiences the threatening aspect of that. Yeah. And I think that your reaction to that threat is what defines who you are as a good fireman, right? Either I'm going to try to pull him down and so that I can do nothing and still be the top dog, or I can make myself better.
You hit, right? At that point, when you hit that level,
you have
one of two choices to make.
Yeah, exactly.
You say, well, I'm either going to drag this guy down and show and prove that he's a dirtbag so it makes me look better and I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, and that's really the key factor there.
I have to raise my game.
Yeah, and really that's the key factor, right, is whether or not I'm willing to do something. Because
that's a character.
If I have no problem with doing something, if I have no problem with making myself better, training, educating myself, then there's no issue with this, right? Because then I see, you know, Mason Stiles, who is, just for an example, Stiles may be better than me at throwing a ladder, right? And if I see him doing that, and I could either say, you know, we're not going to throw ladders anymore, because I don't want to give him the opportunity to prove that he's better than me at throwing ladders, right? Yeah. And I don't want my captain to see it, and I don't want the new senior firefighter to see that or whatever. Or I could say, Mason Stiles is better at me at throwing ladders, and he just hired. That boy's going down.
I see this happening more. It's less and less with firefighter to firefighter.
You know what?
The large part where I see this being an issue is with officers firefighters.
Between ranks.
Because as the officer, there are some guys who, when they make that rank, they're done.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a real tragedy, right? Because as an officer, you ideally, and you know this, you can go all the way back to the way that we talk about promotions, and the way that Rick George talks about that, I think is really fascinating. But like, if you end up sticking the right guy in the spot of an officer, he's going to pull everyone up to his level, right? And then once people get close to actually being on his level, he's going to say, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, I'm pulling you to my level, but let's be clear, you're never getting here, because I'm going to be three steps out in front of you at all times.
They ought to be.
Exactly, and I think that's the mark of your officer, but I think that's also the mark of any man who's senior to anyone else.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It's my job. I'm a junior driver now. And it's my job to take all the firefighters underneath me and say, you're going to be as good as me, but you're never going to be as good as me.
Because you know what I'm saying? Because as soon as you get close. And you should be continuing your education.
And as soon as you get close to me, that becomes unacceptable in my opinion. I'm like, oh, no. Like, no. Heath Ray is not going to be freaking better at me than at pumping this truck. You know what I'm saying? Like, he gets close and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to up my game, boy. I got to keep him in his freaking spot. Yeah. I'm like, don't you be thinking you're going to come and get me, because it ain't going to happen.
You know what? It's,
which is cool. I mean, that's how it should be.
It's friendly competition.
Yeah, you should be always upping your game.
Yeah.
What it sounds suspiciously to me like is poor sportsmanship. It is exactly what it sounds like when we start talking about this. Is because we have some personalities and some pride in the fire service that's not technically positive.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they know. I think competition breeds the betterment, especially around you. If you could have two stations that have a good rivalry and stuff like that, and they're always trying to up each other, you know, that's positive. But when they start to destroy each other, I think that's bad sportsmanship.
Yeah.
And it's usually, you know, attitude reflects leadership. So I think you're onto something when you say it probably comes back to the leadership on how they react to things. Ah, well, man, did you see what Engine 4 did the other day? They made a good knock on that fire and turned everyone around. Ah, well, they're a bunch of idiots that don't follow policy.
Yeah.
You know, is that, instead of giving kudos to that station for doing a good job or whatever, making a stop, fast, aggressive, all of that stuff, we'll just tear them down.
Yeah.
And I think it's just poor sportsmanship. And somebody said it, and I can't remember what we were talking about, but we try to say that there's a bunch of alphas in the fire service, and that's not exactly true. We have a lot of betas in the fire service that try to act like alphas. Hmm. And they just don't have it. So instead, an alpha can walk up to another alpha, punch him in the mouth and say, I think you're stupid, get punched right back in the mouth, and then we're going to go have a beer and talk about it. Because you know what? We understand that each other love the job and that we understand the job.
We're not advocating to do that. So.
Yeah, but
figuratively.
That's,
yeah. This is figurative.
Don't go punching people.
Stop putting disclaimers after when punching. Gerald speaks.
Don't go punching people. It's not good.
Gerald advisory on the front cover of New Work episodes.
How did you know about that?
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah. That's what alphas can do. Betas will not do that. They do not like confrontation. They do not like taking on. And they would rather discredit somebody behind their back without defense than they would actually take them head on.
Yeah.
And having the conversation one-on-one.
And you see that so much. What do you think, Ben? I know this was a long rabbit hole spiel.
It was a big one.
But you sit there and listen to us schmucks. What do you think, buddy?
Well, so, I mean, it's perfect, actually. I mean, it's a perfect segue into talking about what threatens us. So part of what I also do is I'm working, because I'm a nerd, on not just the fire department, but I'm working on a degree in industrial psychology, which looks at the motivation of groups and how people interact with each other. And one of the things that I've learned and been able to do a lot of research on is your brains 5 times a second are scanning for threats to the environment. And that's a part of the fight or flight, you know, what's rumbling in the bushes, is it going to eat me kind of thing. But what's amazing is that a lot of times, especially at the firehouse, right, the things that aren't threatening to us are not the ones that are going to physically hurt us. They're the ones that come across socially, right? So there's 5 areas that a guy named David Rock, who's a PhD in neuroscience, talks about. And they're basically what you just talked about in some form or another. So the first one, status. So somebody made a reference to, like, it seems that there's this level of competition that increases when people get promoted. And so part of that is you get this formal nod, you get sworn in, you get this extra bar, and all of a sudden, like, you're the man or you're the woman. And it's like, now what? And so I don't know if your departments are any different than mine, but I got zero training before I became a frontline supervisor, which is what we call a lieutenant's position. So now I'm in charge of six folks, and good luck, right? And so I had about 9 years of experience at the time, but I love being a firefighter. So that's where all of my training was. So I could force a door open, no problem. But trying to force somebody to talk to me about what was, you know, going on in their personal life, I don't know. I had no clue. So it's these threats, this threat to status, right? So if we're having a conversation and I think you're trying to make a dig at me as an officer, or it could be a threat to, you know, hey, Cody, why did you get picked to be on the apparatus committee and I didn't? Like, we've got the same experience on. Or, you know, I work on the Mayday cadre and I teach, but they didn't ask me back, you know, this year. What I wonder if I did something wrong. It's these areas where we think we have something to offer and we're not picked. And then there's very little information that comes behind it about why we weren't given that. So if we're in a situation in which, like, we can feel ourselves, and you'll know. I mean, you know when you're getting angry. Almost everybody's aware. Like, the words you use next are really important. And somebody said it about controlling your reaction. Like, that really is about you. And what I try to remember based on some of the failures I've had is, no matter what shit sandwich they're handing you, your obligation as a leader is 51% of that problem. Right? So I'm not going to fix everything and do all of the work for them. I want them to work through their own problem, because that's where they build competence of working through their own problems. But how it goes, I always try to think about, like, I've got to own 51% of this. So if this outcome's successful, then I'll give all of that away. But if it goes badly, then I've got to think, like, there was something I could have done. There's something I could have said. There was an opinion I could have asked. There was something I could have done. And I think a lot of times leaders just wash their hands of it and they go, ah, you know, it was George's fault. I tried, but, you know, George was just a piece of shit, and it was what it was. But it's not, right? And if you think it is, then why did they give you the bar? Like, right. Why are you the officer if that's what you think it is? So status is one of them. The next is certainty, right? So when people don't have trust in how outcomes will play out, they're going to reserve their judgment. So it's like, I mean, you could use a sporting as an example. So if I told you, I need you to play hard for 60 minutes, you know, come that 59th minute, it's all out. But if I say, hey, I need you to play hard, and then that's it, and you're like, are we going for 10 minutes? Are we going for an hour? Like, what's the deal? So you'll try to reserve, and then especially as you look around, you'll start gauging your performance of what everybody else is doing. And then, because nobody knows, everybody will start dropping their performance. And you see this in promotional processes all the time, right? All of a sudden, this guy or girl who's been a total slug is interested in getting promoted, and they're taking every class and they're reading every book. And you're like, hey, man, that you've got no integrity in this decision, because you didn't want this until you wanted it. You should have been preparing for this. And now you're going to compete for a spot in which somebody that really wants this and has been, you know, preparing this for months, not just weeks, has to compete with you. So what do you do about that? And when you've got leaders that jump around and they react differently to even the same thing, that's going to be hard to gauge. So I worked for a guy that you'd come in the morning, and if he held his coffee cup and drank out of the left hand, it was going to be a good day. And if he held it in his right hand, he'd probably had a fight with his wife, and that no matter what you said, you were going to be wrong, and no matter what happened, it was going to be a big deal. So those were the days you just hunkered down and you learned to avoid him, and you didn't take him problems on those days. You waited until it was back in the left hand. And so people will read that and they get consistent. And so they'll engage. So your goal as a leader, it's like, all right, you know, how do I make it so that people feel comfortable bringing me their problems all the time? Because that's my job. Like, bring me your problem and I'll help you work through it. But a lot of times people can't control their reactions, and they've got something going on. They may not even be, you know, happening at work. And then, you know, the rookie comes in and all of a sudden you lose your cool and you yell at him. And he's like, well, I'm never going to talk to the lieutenant about this again. And every time you do that, you lose a window to influence them. And that's, like, whatever your definition of leadership is, it's got some aspect of influence. And I would argue it's got some aspect of making decisions as two common denominators. And so if you're creating a situation in which people don't feel safe to bring you things they need to get answers on, you're not going to be able to help them make decisions, nor are you going to have all the information that you need to make the right decision, especially for the team. And they're not going to be bringing you stuff to give you the chance to influence how they feel about work, home, family, whatever. So that's 0-2 as far as I'm concerned. And it all has to do with certainty. And if you are trying to figure out, like, how do you build trust? Oh, that's really hard. No, it's not. Be consistent, right? And you can be consistently bad for all I care. Like, I can totally say, I trust that you'll screw this up, Cody. And that's a version of trust. I can also say, I'll trust that you get it right. And it's the same thing. It's a different side of the coin, but it's the same coin. So if you can be consistent in how you handle problems, and this is like where we talk about the metaphor of the duck on the water, if you guys have ever heard this. You know, that duck, when you look out on that lake, is just smooth across the surface. But you know he's kicking like hell underneath the water. And he might be fighting off a fish, or he might be tangled up in something. But on the surface, you never know that. So that's the goal. Because when the leader's scared or the leader's frustrated, they can literally transfer those feelings to their people. And that's, you see this with divorces, right? Where the kids think it's their fault when it's not their fault and they don't know any better. And it's the same thing with leaders, no different. So you got status and certainty. There's three more. You got autonomy, and that's a huge one. So if I don't think that anything I offer, anything I do has any impact on anything, how likely am I to actually engage in that? And this is where micromanaging comes in, right? If I sit on a committee and you ask me my opinion, I give it to you and you do what you want anyway, I'm not going to sit on that committee again. If you ask me to do a task and I bring it to you and then you redo the task, I'm not going to do it next time you ask me to do it. And that could be working with the rookie or coming up with a training plan. People want freedom, right? And they want some leash. And so if you feed it out appropriately as they earn it, it's a great tool. But if you don't, then it doesn't work out very well. Relatedness is a big one, man. That's probably a large portion of the breakdown. It's back to the officer firefighter. As soon as that person gets promoted, they start experiencing things on a different level. And it happens all the way up in the organization. And I try to tell people, you know, even though the fire chief was once a firefighter, it's not fair for him to assume that he knows the challenges that you're dealing with, because things have changed in work, who we've hired, the expectations of us, the mission, like all of those things have changed since that person was in that role. And so the worst fire chiefs are the ones that assume it's the same. And so they hold you accountable to things the way they were 20 years ago. And that's where you usually see a lot of micromanaging, because that's the style of leadership that we had. It's very top-down driven, very hierarchical, very mother may I. And when you have a higher degree of relatedness, you have firefighters who understand that that fire chief is under different pressures, right? So my pressure is get you home, like, so you can raise your kids and that you enjoy coming to the firehouse. His pressure is pay for that firehouse. You know, my threat is fire sneaks up on us, pushing down the hallway and flashes on us. His threat is he didn't give the right information to the county manager and subsequently lost $10 million in funding for the new apparatus that he was trying to buy for you. It's totally different, and yet it's all supporting the mission, you know, the same. It's just in a different way. And so when we stop and when we can pull ourselves out of these pity parties that we have, and I have them as much as anybody, about he doesn't get it or she doesn't get it, or they don't understand or they don't like us, it's us versus them. Like, when we can go, you know what, he's got kids, he's got family, he loves his job, I love this job, and it's okay if we love these things in different ways and we have roles that are different, then that's when we experience more of the team and we experience less competition, but the standard, like the bar gets raised at the same time. It's kind of funny how that works, right? When we're busy competing against each other, that's a lot different than competing with each other. And I would love to have a game, a basketball game that comes down to the wire and it's a three-point shot that wins it in the last second. And the underdog is the one who wins. And the players on those two teams are high-fiving each other because what a freaking game that was. Sucks we lost, but man, what a game. Like, haven't had fun because, golly day, that was a challenge that we haven't experienced. That's what I would want for teams in the fire service. And so, like I said, you know, instead of competing against each other, think about competing with.
And that was one of the hardest things I had to learn, Ben, was that I can't make some other guy love this job as much as I do. And
right.
that was hard for me to get. I was like, how do you not? How can you not love this job? Like, it's the greatest job. How can you not be a student of the fire service and give it everything that I'm giving? It's not right. That hard, you know? And then it's hard. It's hard to put that lesson.
Well, and the thing that I think comes with time and experience and maturity, because that's what maturity is for me, right? It's the ability to obtain a perspective over time. So you can have a really mature 18-year-old because they had a shitty upbringing and they had to learn to raise themselves and life hit them hard. Or you could have a 30-year-old male who was completely spoiled by mommy and daddy, never had to work, and doesn't know how to turn a wrench. And there's two different levels of maturity there. So it's not age, it's experience and time dealing with that experience that gives you that. And it's the same thing you did. I really struggled when people came up and gave what I would consider half-assed performances or didn't enjoy stretching lines the way I did. And what you have to appreciate is, you know, your job is not to get them to love it as much as you do, but they came to this job for a reason. So why don't you help them love it more in the way that they think they should? So if you've got somebody who, you know, is not ever going to be your king alpha throwing ladders, but he's got a lot of value to offer on the mechanic side of the engine, like, give him more opportunities there. I mean, you still got to hold him to the standard on the ladders, but really help explore, maybe push him into that apparatus committee, maybe try to get him involved in the driver pump operator program where you're teaching people about the apparatus. There's so many opportunities, and a lot of times leaders don't want to put themselves in areas where they're uncomfortable, so they try to pull people to their strengths instead of risking looking like they don't know what they're doing and going to operate in other people's areas of strengths. But that's where you break down status, and that's where you break down or improve relatedness, and you get a better product. You get a definitely a better team. And that's where you build trust, right? Like, when I'm willing to go 51 miles to your 49, then you know that I will always get to you, no matter what it is. And I may not have an answer when I get there, but I will always get there. And I think a lot of people are missing that in their leaders. They feel like they don't care. They feel like they're out for themselves. They feel like they're not getting the information they need to make good decisions. When they don't know the answer to something, their leaders don't tell them. And when they say, you know, I want to know this information because I want to be able to make better decisions for myself and my peers, and their answers are, you don't need to know that. Or, you know, it doesn't matter because you're just a firefighter. Golly day, if I had a dollar for every time I was told that.
Oh yeah,
just something, and it doesn't matter.
You'll like, figure it out when you get there.
Yeah, I'm you're like, just that, a firefighter.
That's not
going
to work for me.
yeah, and but. You know, and so anyway, to wrap all that up, like, those are the things that every day we process, and we don't even know we're processing it, and that's why some people inspire you and some people intimidate you, but they're giving the same information to the group. That's why I can have what I think is a motivational speech, and one firefighter walks away and is like, yeah, I love working for Ben. And the other one's like, that guy's an asshole. He's arrogant. And they're like, I said the same thing. Why did you guys get two different messages out of that? And that happens all the time. And it has to do about the quality of the relationship that you have with that person. So, you know, you ask anybody that's been in any kind of leadership position, do you have problems operationally, or do you have them back at home, kind of the staging area? So for our purposes, it would be like, are you addressing problems on the fire ground, or are you addressing problems in the firehouse? I can tell you where 90% of them are, and it ain't the fire ground. So that's the kind of leadership stuff we got to focus on and train on. And I guarantee you, it doesn't matter whether you're in Texas or Virginia. It doesn't matter if you work for an insurance company or the fire service. People are people, and they'll come with the same bullshit problems, just masked in different excuses and different scenarios. But fundamentally, the same. Absolutely the same.
How do you build the positive relationship between, for example, a company officer and firefighters and his drivers? Like, and that's something that I really got when you're talking about the relationship between the two and how it affects, like, if you're going to teach me something, right? And I come into that assuming that I already know that I don't like you, and I already know before you even start talking, I already know that I don't like what you have to say, right? And so no matter what you say, no matter how good it is, no matter how anyone else takes it, I automatically hate it, right? Because I don't like you. Now,
because right, you're influenced by a culture, like, yeah, somebody's already gotten you and be like, that guy's an idiot, don't listen to him.
Well, stupid. Either that, or you've been a jackwagon to me personally, right? And that's, yeah, luckily I find that's usually not the case. But how would a company officer, and this is a very broad question, but how does a company officer, or even a driver to his firefighters, how do they build that positive relationship apart from just saying the cop-out answer, just be friendly. You know what I'm saying? It's easy to say don't be a jackwagon to the people under you, but what might be a better way of saying that?
I think you have to go with what Robbie Owen says. You have to show that you give a damn.
Nobody cares until they know you care, right?
Yeah.
So, like, that, I mean, that is a deep question, and so I'll try to answer it as best I can. When we talk about relationships, what you've got to understand is, you know, people carry baggage. And, like, when I've got a new role and I walk into that firehouse as the captain, then I've got to be sensitive to the fact that they've had five people there in the last 6 years before me, right? And so am I getting a fresh slate in their minds? Like, am I coming in and they're like, oh, it's, you know, Ben, and he's going to be great, and, you know, based on what we heard, or he's going to be terrible based on what we've heard? Or are they processing some of the things I do based on their own experiences with the previous five captains? And, you know, gold is the color the officers wear here. And if the last captain pissed them off on the way out, do you think it's entirely possible that they could take it out on that on me, and I didn't do anything to deserve it, right? And so that can happen. A lot of times rumors will get there before you do, and I have definitely suffered from perception issues. Some I deserve and some I don't at all. And so what you're talking about, really, to answer that question, is you've got to disarm people, and you don't have to be friendly to disarm them. You just have to, like, I mean, you're right with Robbie, who's a good buddy. You do have to show them that you care, and it's not just about the job, it's about them. So, you know, a lot of times leaders feel pressure to give feedback to people, and it's like, how do you do that? Because people react unpredictably when you give feedback. Sometimes they thank you for it, sometimes they resent you for it, and it's just, you just never know. So it's about, all right, well, how do you make this thing consistent? Well, it's building on what we talked about previously. If I'm trying to have a conversation with you, whether it's leading training or just a, hey man, like, I want you to do better, and I'm choosing messaging and body language that is pinging you in those areas of status, certainty, autonomy, relatedness, or fairness, then you're not going to be receptive, because you're naturally going to be defensive, and you didn't have any choice on that because that's how your body works. I mean, your brain's completely taken over. So when you're talking about trying to offer something to someone and they don't like you, whether it's earned or not, the good news is you can rewire that. And it takes a little bit of time and it takes some consistency, but really what you're doing is you're changing the way they feel about what it is you have to say. Because there are lots of people that I respect intellectually that I don't talk with personally because I just don't enjoy the way I feel after I talk with them. They make me feel stupid. And then vice versa, there are people that may not be total subject experts, but I really enjoy my conversations with them. And then there's people that have the ability to do both, super smart and super personable. And so when you're talking with someone, and you just got to kind of almost like have a strategy of, all right, well, I've got to cool this conversation as I go in. If I know they don't like me, then perhaps there's a chance to humble myself in some way. If the feedback's been that I've been arrogant before, then let's take measures to try not to do the same thing. And then offer, I mean, there's so many different ways to do this, right? Where you can really try to tailor every conversation, especially when it's one-on-one, with what they need to get out of it. You wouldn't talk to the rookie the same way as you would the senior man or woman about how to pump a fire truck. So change the context of the situation of the conversation to get them the benefit that allows them to think that you care about them. And really what it's about, I think, is every leader, you know, I think when you get first promoted, it's inherent that you want to be liked. It's just impossible not to want to be liked. You want a good reputation. You want people to be happy to see you. And so a lot of times people will walk on eggshells and they won't do what they need to do, especially if they get with a shift that's not performing well. And then some people just don't care and they come in like a bull in a china shop and they fixed everything, but they create problems as they're fixing the old problems. And that was kind of where I ended up.
I lived that life myself. I'm trying to turn a new leaf, though, instead of going at it so aggressive and passion-filled, because passion can blind us, right?
Yeah.
If we're so passion-filled that we're ruining relationships, but we're still preaching the good word, you know, then it's not necessarily, the message that we have isn't necessarily being heard.
Yeah.
So we got to work on it to be good at...
I got to figure out how to bring this clock down. Because it's like, action is you have to have passion to do this work. You just do, because some of the stuff you're going to be asked to do is crap, and it's going to take a significant toll on you. And if you don't enjoy the mission, it's not going to be a good fit for you long term. So passion, absolutely necessary. But it's the difference between sending passion down a hose line with the nozzle at the end, where it's just coming out everywhere and it's not really serving any purpose. You know, it's just flooding the area, and it's actually kind of dangerous, because then you got a coupling coming up that's, you know, going to hit you in the face. Or it's that you put a nozzle on it and you can control it. You can turn it on and off. You can direct it where it needs to be, and it gives it purpose and reach and penetration. Like, that's the kind of passion we want, not just blind rush in. Like, we want to be smart about it. And it's hard, especially when you get into things you are very passionate about. But a lot of times we are our least effective selves on the topics that we care about the most. And that's because our emotions get involved, and then we stop thinking strategically and we just start reacting emotionally. Once you can figure out through your own leadership journey that it's not about being liked, the next step you'll probably arrive at is, all right, well, if they don't like me necessarily, then at least I'm going to work so they'll respect me. Okay, so they'll ask me my opinions, and they will enjoy the fact that I can keep them safe and bring them back from fires and whatever that is to you. And that will last, you know, some people that'll last their careers. And so they'll be liked by some groups and not liked by others. And I would argue that there's a third level to that that not a lot of leaders get to. And I think it takes a lot of intention. I do think it takes some training. I think it takes a lot of self-discovery and a lot of trial and error. But if you can get there, and I think you'll recognize this in maybe some of the people in your lives, whether it's a brother, father, mother, you know, or somebody from church or somebody in the fire department, is the relationship that they have with you evolved, and that, yes, you may or may not like them. Yes, you may or may not respect them. But after you're done talking with them, you like the way you feel about yourself, and you respect your competency yourself. So it's about making people believe that they can do it, not you. And this is, I think, a classic trap of leadership. Like, when I think about leadership, I think Hollywood stuff. Like, Mel Gibson in Braveheart, right? Where he's leading that last charge, and he's up on the horse, and he's got this great speech, and, like, you get goosebumps in the theater, and, like, you're like, that's a leader, right? He can do this. Like, he can lead us in this battle. And that was never what it was about. It was about making you think that you can go into this battle. Like, that's what leadership should be about. And so I think, if you're having a disconnect between firefighter, driver, firefighter, officer, chief officer, and firefighter, then you've got to revisit those levels of the relationship and think about it. Like, is this that I don't respect him? Is this that I don't like the way he makes me feel? Or is this, you know, where we've transcended and I can tell him what I think and he can tell me what I think, because we have each other's best interests in mind. And navigating those threats that we talked about earlier with status and certainty, autonomy, relatedness, and fairness, what you get is an emotionally intelligent conversation where, and like, this is a nozzle on, nozzle off with that passion. I want to do this fire conference, right? So I'm like, I took this to the fire chief, and I'm going to own this thing 51%, but maybe there's a way I could have presented this differently. And had I known that he didn't like circuit speakers, maybe I could have packaged it differently. Maybe I could have brought in different people the first year and then kind of milked in different people in varying years. There's always a different way to put that fire out. And when you sit in the same spot and the fire is getting bigger, you're not being effective. And you've got to think creatively about how to move that hose line around, how to open that passion on something. And timing has a lot to do with it as well. You know, if somebody's not being receptive to what you have to say, then it just may not be the time to tell them. It took me, like, one of the hardest conversations I had with somebody that I think is probably one of the most important conversations, because I have seen the success this individual has experienced since. It took me 6 months to have it. And it was never that he fell below the minimum. It just was that he wasn't reaching his potential. And 6 months of working out with him and having casual conversations as much as professional, and really getting to know him, his circumstances, his hopes, his dreams, and really becoming friends, even best friends at the end of the day. Like, when I had to hit him with what I needed to give him in order for him to reach his potential, like, it was a thank you instead of a F you. And it was all contingent on the relationship, because when we started day zero, it was, hey man, I've heard about you. I don't think this is going to work. Like, and that's a safety thing. I get it. Everybody is going to be reserved. Like, you got to earn my trust. So why would I listen to you until I trust you? And if I don't trust you and I have to listen to you, it's only going to be a compliance thing. And if you're forcing people to comply with things, you're not leading them, you're managing them. And nobody's going to enjoy that long term, because that's a huge hit to autonomy when people are only reacting because you're saying jump. So I hope that kind of hits your question in at least some fashion that's helpful.
Oh, I definitely think so, man. That's some solid stuff, bro.
I don't think many people address that either. You know, it's kind of like, I think even with some of the more prominent guys right now who are around in the fire service, they're putting their opinions out there. Most people are not focusing much about the personal aspect of the job, and that's something that I've been kind of thinking about lately. Is, you know, you can push people as much as you want, and you could provide for them all the resources they need to be a great fireman, but if they can't stand you because either you are being negligent, being a jackwagon, or you just haven't found the correct channel to, you know, actually reach them, your efforts are going to be useless, right? Because, yep. I mean, you could, and that's not to say, that's not every instance, right? Because I could have no respect for Cody, right, as a person, but I could have respect for him as a good fireman, and that's on me to try to still learn from him. But without a doubt, that's going to be much less effective if I don't care for him at all. You know, and that's something I don't think many guys are really talking about that right now. That's kind of a point that I find sort of fascinating. It's that we're even now, we're still so into the job that we're trying to problem solve things amongst ourselves. We're still looking outward at the job instead of sometimes inward at our own guys. And that's something I think we need to be better at.
Well, I think these are all great lessons, and there's definitely great information and all of this stuff. But it's exactly like firefighting, if you really look like it. It's so dynamic, you can't define it. There's so many moving parts that go into just a crew's relationship that you just can't simply define and say that this approach is going to work for everything.
Yeah.
And like he was talking about was that relationship is interdynamic for each person. So the captain has four different relationships for the firemen under him.
Yeah.
Those four different firemen. Why do you gotta? You know I cannot talk and read at the same time.
So we made Gerald
read. Did I just blow your brain?
Showed him a picture of a dog.
Sorry. Yeah.
We showed him a picture of a fire truck, and he got sidetracked.
So Ben was talking about it. I'm just gonna have to let that one go. Just edit that crap all right, out.
And big silence. So I'll see it later on. Okay, I'll probably notice that. Back. Okay, that's perfect.
Do you remember what you're talking about yet?
Yeah. No, just move on. Move on.
Well, I offer this, and maybe it'll jog what you were thinking about. You know, so we spend a lot of time training our people to read buildings and read smoke and anticipate what's coming next, not forcing themselves to react to what already happened. And it's the same thing for leadership and people, right? Just like you talked about, my relationship is different with everyone at work, regardless of their rank. I've got firefighters that I trust more than officers, and I'm not talking about my current assignment. I've got people that are above me who I don't trust at all. I mean, it's basically just like, what degree has the relationship evolved, and then that makes it more effective or less effective. And it's not about, I can't tell people enough, it's not about being friendly or being soft or being kind. Like, what we're talking about is to love your people enough that you would tell them anything to help them do better. And that means you're fucking up, mm-hmm. right? And then to have them look at you and sit there and be like, you're right. And that's when you know, and not just that you're right, but that they act on it, right? And that's when you know you're being effective. And a lot of times people, they just won't do that. It's like a surface level leadership they're interested in, where we walk down the hallway and, you know, Cody you're passing me, and I know you, and I'm like, hey, how's it going? And you say, oh, good, how about you? And we continue walking. We never stop and actually talk. And like, why do we even ask that in the first place? Whereas like, I stop, like, and you're like, well, hey man, actually, I'm glad you asked. I'm actually kind of crappy. And you're like, oh, I wasn't prepared for that. I got a meeting I got to go to. I was just trying to be friendly. Like, that's how most leaders operate. And so, like, you have to have this mindset that when you talk about showing up for your people, you're really showing up to be available for your people. And whether it's training them on the fire ground or helping them to be more effective in how they manage relationships with others, because you know those folks. You know people that are tremendous firefighters that would be great officers. They just can't shut up. They just, like, they have to fight every chief, or they have to complain about everything and every little, you know, nuance of what's not going right in the world. And you're like, man, if you could just shut your mouth, they'd promote you. Like, and that's what we're talking about. These are people that fail to understand how the relationships with the same, you know, rank of people, or even the same day where timing has changed and stressors have changed, they can't read the building correctly. And so why would you ever give them a promotion to then be put in charge of people that could have very real effects on the health and wellness of your workforce? No, I'm not going to do it. And so that's the level of leadership we've got to push to. And it all comes back to feelings and emotions. It really does. And we can jump on that next, or we can go wherever you guys want.
Well, communication is a huge thing, man. And there's a huge lack of communication, I think, in the fire service. I mean, you could see it on any NIOSH report. That's the first thing that they point out is communication. But it's not just on the fire scene. It's in the firehouse also. And
oh, yeah.
Whether it's coming from the company officer or coming from a chief level, there has to be transparency, right? You can't have an administration trying to, you know when to hold them, and they're just sitting there just not letting you see their cards, and then all of a sudden, whammo, on top of you. And then you're like, well, this is new. Thought we were supposed to be more transparent, open door policies, stuff like that.
Unspoken expectations.
Yeah, those kind of things.
Yeah, and all that goes back to certainty, is what you guys are talking about. And so here's the kicker, right? And I would argue that our problem isn't communication. It's the appearance of communication, right? It's the appearance that communication has taken place. Because I'm the fire chief, and my guys have told me, we want, you know, information. We want you to be transparent. And so I'm like, okay, done. So I put an email out. It takes me 2 hours to think through this email and write this email, and I give you as much information as I can, because maybe it involves a legal matter or a personal matter that I can't disclose.
Or COVID-19. Or maybe you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Those have been coming out a lot lately.
Right. Or I give you as much as I know, but I don't know it all. Or I give you as much as was told to me, and I heard that person wrong. And so you get this email, and you're like, I thought the fire chief said he was going to be transparent. And then feedback gets to me as the fire chief that you didn't like that. And I'm like, well, why bother? Like, I tried to be transparent. And so you get this, like, cycle where, you know, people just spin up because I tried and it wasn't good enough. And your avenues to give me feedback, and this is really with anything, it's difficult. When you have hierarchy, you have insulation, and insulation gets rid of noise. Like, it's what it does. It takes up space. And so when you've got a real valid concern and I don't have the avenue to you to get that concern, then by the time it makes it through the rank of three levels, it's not the same whether it's communicated with the same urgency or whether it's actually a different message. It's no different than that game of telephone you used to play in a circle in grade school. It was never the same, like, when it started, when it got around to the end. Same thing.
And with emails, I don't know if, because I can get the same email, right? And I think it's with any kind of type of communication, but we'll focus on written communication. And I get the email, and I read it, and I'm like, okay, not do this, 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 and this. And then I'm talking with some other guy who got the same exact email, and then he's interpreted so much different. And I'm like, why the dissension? Like, stop, schmuck. This is exactly what it said right here. I got the same email you did. Well, I didn't read it that way. Can you see this right here? I'm like, no. In some forms of communication, there has to be that feedback loop, right? And those guys who are going to be, who try to use dissension and what to those messages, usually they're not going to apply any feedback because they just like their message and they're going to start spreading their hate and discontent. And instead of doing that feedback loop where you, hey, chief, what did you mean by this? They just start spreading hate. So there has to be like a, I don't want to be inundated with meetings, right? Like, I don't want a ton of meetings, but there has to be some point where it's a person-to-person communication process where when you have questions, we address them right now in front of everybody, and emails just don't cut it. For me. Maybe I'm wrong. I like to have a sit-down meeting with somebody, and all the questions I have ready and available, and we talk about them. And then I know, and you know, and there's no communication barriers, and both of our messages get heard.
Well, that's obviously the better in that sort of instance, because they say that you know, body language is such a huge part of communication between two people, right? If you tell me something, just as an example, right? If you say to me, "Will you go clean the bathrooms?" right? And I respectfully say, "Sure," and I go off and do it, and there's no tension between us, right? Oh. You've asked me as my officer to go and do something, and it is my job, and I understand that it's my job to go and do it. But if you say, "Hey, will you go clean the bathrooms?" and I shrug my shoulders, and then I freaking toss my head up, and I go, "Sure," like, there's now obviously a problem between us, right? And
right.
And in both instances, the same exact language was communicated between us, and that's the whole argument to conversation in person. And I think that there is definitely a place for emails and memos and things that are strictly professional, saying this is a policy change, read it, yeah. You know. But then there's absolutely a time for sitting down with your captains and then saying, "Captains, go sit down with your crews and convey this," and saying, "Look, this policy change is kind of weird. We didn't want to just send a memo out about it. We wanted to talk to you about it, right? Because we want to clarify some things we could see becoming a problem."
So you talked about that question and that reaction, for that communication from leader to subordinate.
Yeah.
Could that same exact conversation and reaction, both of them, happen with the same firefighter at different times? And that's, the answer is yes.
Yeah, obviously.
So depending on what's going on, and that's the dynamic factor with communication, trust, respect, everything
right.
Between crews, and that is different between captains and chiefs, captains and their firefighters.
It's peer to peer. In every instance, yeah. It's peer to peer, right? Because if I say that to Gerald yeah. knows me well enough at this point that he knows that I don't hate his guts, right?
Yeah.
And then he knows that I carry at yeah. least some amount of respect for him as a man and as a fireman, right?
Yeah.
And so you know that if I shrug you off, and I never do that. But if I do this one time, you know
something's
there's
up.
Just something jacked up with me today, right?
Yep.
And you know, well, Brandon doesn't usually do that, you know? But if I do that every time, then you know there's a deeper underlying problem that we've got to work on from there. But like if I say, if you ask me to do that 10 times,
yeah,
and 8 of those 10 times, I do it with no problem, but 2 of those 10 times, I shrug you off and I'm like,
but it's something I need to get in front
exactly.
of. It's something that I don't need to ignore or
correct.
Hope goes away or hope
yeah.
corrects itself.
Correct.
And
yeah.
That's where Ben was talking about. A lot of stuff is being involved, knowing that people know that you care, showing that you truly care. Mm-hmm. Because, and that's one of the things about in the firehouse, which is 80% of our jobs, is dealing with each other in the firehouse. And it's the most difficult part of our job.
And how are you going to know that a officer yeah. cares if you, like what Ben was saying, you walk down the yep. hallway and you're like, "Hey, how you doing, buddy?" "Oh, doing good." And you keep walking.
Yep.
And that happens your entire time.
Yep.
So you never develop that trust and relationship yep. with that person because it's just a quick high.
I don't think correct? Necessarily even that care is the correct word to apply here. I think even an officer that I think pretty much every officer cares about their men, right? Otherwise, like, it would be so blatantly obvious that you would, I mean, your guys would hate your guts, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I could tell that
there's
you honestly had no
there.
Care, there's probably some out there, but I think the more appropriate word here is investment.
Okay.
Right? If your
yeah.
officer is invested in you and your life,
yeah.
And I understand that you can only be, and if you're an officer if you're a station captain, right, and if you're at a station where the captain rides a truck and you got a lieutenant that rides the engine, and one shift at any given moment, you got like 12 guys on duty, right? I understand you can only be so invested in every one of those 12 guys' lives, right? Obviously, you get full up on trying to be invested in every single one of those guys. You're going to exhaust yourself. But there is, you can make it very clear to a person that you're invested in them by remembering to ask them how their wife was doing when she was sick.
Yeah.
Something as small as that, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, how's the new puppy doing that you guys got a week ago? That tells me that, like, you're going out of your way to remember something about my life. And that's much deeper to me than asking me if I've been in my task book.
Yep.
You know, while it is your job to hold me accountable to my training, I think that if you're going to basically be my boss for a third of my life, which is what you are, then you ought to know what my life is about.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's only fair. It's only fair because the fire ground's almost easiest on the fire ground, because in the fire ground, it's strictly business. It doesn't matter if I disagree with what Cody has to say on the fire ground. I have to do it.
Yeah.
Right. And if he says something really stupid, I can respectfully say, hey, I think that's kind of dumb. And we could talk about that. If it warrants immediate conversation, we can talk about that. But on the fire ground, it's easy because whatever he says goes, and I just do it. But at the firehouse, like, I can pretty well get away with not doing a lot of what he wants me to do. And right, and that's where that tension builds, because he wants me to go do something. And I if I go clean the bathrooms and I have a terrible attitude, you know they're not going to be cleaned the right way. I'm not going to care while I'm doing it. They're going to be cleaned really crappy, pun intended. Okay? But like, it's the same as any goes. It's the same as if anything, like if you want me to go check a truck and I just do not care, it's going to get pencil whipped. And there's going to be a piece of equipment missing off that truck that's going to be critical later. And so all that to say that I think that if you're invested in your men, then they care about you back. They invest in you back. And this way, I know that the guy who's above me is not just here to boss me around, but he's here to...
He truly cares.
He actually is invested in me and my life. And like I said, he's in control of me a third of my life. And that's a massive portion of my life, right? Like, I could be asleep at the station tomorrow, you know, and my captain could come in and say, get up, we're going to go do whatever. And like, I will do it. Like, I have to. I can't just be like, no, I'm sleeping. This is sleeping hours. Like, I have to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that it's important that officers recognize the weight that they carry in that kind of instance. Definitely. If you're not invested in your men and they don't care about you, you're running a course that carries no weight apart from strictly doing the job. And you're not going to be very good at the job.
Yeah.
Because all you're doing is barking orders, and your guys may or may not even be good at those things, you know?
Well, and one of the things that even firefighters don't understand is that dynamic exists, especially for captains, middle management. You have that dynamic both ways.
Yeah.
Then you're learning and trying to invest in the people above you and hopefully have that return of investment and all of that stuff. So you're catching... Yeah, you are the filter from the top to the bottom and the bottom to the top. And trying to manage that, and sometimes you're getting heat on both fronts and trying to manage those relationships. And maybe you have a dead relationship above you, which is probably the worst situation you can ever get caught in, because you're trying to show that you to your people that you care and that you're concerned and all of this stuff. But that trust dynamic, that investment dynamic that exists, you can really get stuck in a really hard spot of, look, guys, I'm taking this up, but... And you have to be honest. It's not going anywhere. I can't do anything about it. Then you're trying to turn around, still give the benefit of the doubt to the people above you. And you're like, look, guys, I can only hold this back so long.
Mm-hmm.
I am telling my guys the truth because I'm not a liar. I'm not going to lose trust with my crew and tell them, oh, yeah, we're working on it. It's all going to be fine and dandy. I'm telling them what's going on right now. And pretty soon they're going to lose faith in me, because they trust me to handle their situation for them. And it can, that's what I've been caught in before. That's what comes to mind when we talk about that. You can really get just stuck and you're, I don't know where to go.
Yep. We have traveled down this rabbit hole for a minute now, boys.
Sorry.
Ben, tell us about some of the classes that you do and you help instruct on with the like intoxicated leadership and some of those articles that you've put out there. I don't know if we've kind of hit them in too much detail.
So I've got
three main ones that I teach at the bigger conferences, and then I'll usually do some sort of combination or custom tailored for smaller departments, because I want it to relate, you know, why they brought me there in the first place. So the first is the intoxicated leadership class, like I talked about before. And that's, this whole class is based on kind of what we've been talking about is, can people trust you? How do you communicate? And we talk about leading people on the fire ground as well as in the firehouse, and how our brains are working against us and where they're working to try to support us. And a lot of that was honestly based on just a terrible personnel interaction that I had that I blew, and I could have done a lot better. And then when I started looking behind the scenes at some of the science of leadership, not just the theory, then I was able to make sense of stuff. And the turnaround in my performance and my reputation over the last 5 years since incorporating this stuff has been phenomenal. So that's my favorite one to teach. And one of the reasons I enjoy it so much is a lot of the feedback I get, some has to do with the firehouse and some has to do with the fire ground, but a lot of it has to do with, hey, you know, I was having a fight with my wife the other day and I tried some of the stuff you talked about and I got out of it faster and we moved on quicker. Well, that's great. Or, hey, I actually had a conversation with my son the other day and I felt like we connected. I was like that's the stuff I'm kind of interested in doing more so than just tactically, this is what you should do on the fire ground. So I do that piece, and everything that we're talking about is supported in what's called organizational culture. Right, so you got your mission statements, you got your values, you got all the stuff on the walls, on the literature, but the bottom piece of that is you know, the stories of your fire department, the context of what you've done and your involvement in the community, how people feel about what it is you're being asked to do. So morale's a piece of that stuff. And when you look at change, like introducing change in the fire service, or even supporting what you're doing currently, culture plays a huge role in determining whether people are going to be resistant or whether they're going to get behind. And healthy cultures are low in politics, high in performance, and great retention with low turnover. And so we've got a whole class that talks about, you know, where the fire service has kind of been and where we might be going, and then a leader's role in that and trying to help people understand, you know, it's not necessarily what you said, it's how you said it, but it's also about the people that were here before you and how you're trying to change what it is they've done. And then the last one is a leading and learning class where we get really into the, it's funny, we watch a lot of videos and we can kind of predict the outcomes of stuff. And so we talk about the way we run our training academies, the way we run our small group training sessions, and really trying to change our styles up to really maximize our time with these students. And this could be a rookie school, this could be an in-service for incumbents, this could be a committee, like we're trying to talk about that communication piece. So an 8-hour intoxicated leadership class will get you a little bit of all of that stuff, but we break them down and do it. It's basically just, you know, what are your aches and pains and what do you want to talk about? But I mean, it all comes back to leadership. It's got a high, all of them have high levels of participation. So we'll go down rabbit holes just like anything else. I taught a class in Waterton, Wisconsin, right before the coronavirus stuff. And we were talking about retention way more than I ever thought we would have, and generational differences, but it all relates. It's all part of it. So we try to do it comprehensively and not just like, these are the 5 steps you should do if you want to be an outstanding leader, because that's bullshit. It doesn't work that way, right? It just does not work that way. And something I was thinking about when I was listening to you guys talk about this level of caring and investment is, I think the best leaders would make the worst criminals. And here's what I mean by that. If you've ever watched a CSI show, you know, there's usually an opening scene where somebody's committed some sort of heinous, you know, heinous crime, right? And then, you know, the next scene is going to be those CSI investigators, and they're going to be looking for evidence. And that's evidence is proof that someone was there. So DNA, fingerprints, all that stuff. And so the best criminals are the ones who leave no trace that they were there. And I would even argue that the best criminals are the ones who leave no trace they were there, and they're able to frame somebody else that they did it. And so if we're looking at leaders using that metaphor, like, I want a leader who has left his fingerprints all over everything. I want a leader, like, when I think about, you know, him 10 years from now, and I think about, golly day, he took me out on that front ramp and pumped that fire truck with me every freaking day, even when the senior guys were giving him crap. And I really appreciate the fact that he did that. People's careers, Like when you have fingerprints on their careers because you showed up and invested in them, that may make you a really crappy criminal, but it's going to make you a really great leader. And the worst leaders are the ones where, like, you ask a guy, hey, man, what do you do for you when you worked with him for 2 years? And he's like, well, honestly, like, nothing. You know, he did his part-time business at work, and he never really trained us. Like, he was a nice guy. I'd invite him back to the barbecue, but I don't really have an interest in working with him, and I don't think he really did anything for us. Like, unfortunately, there's way too many people occupying those spots with that kind of mentality where I leave them alone, they do a good enough job, I've done my job as a leader. That's not what that was about. No. So, like, if you're interested in learning more about why people react to you the way they do and how to be effective communicating and have all of it relate to your job on the fire ground, then that, like, bring us in, because that's the kind of stuff we like talking about. We don't like talking about leadership theory, about what might happen. Like, we want to talk about your problems, what is happening, and then give you some strategies to work through that stuff. And everybody's ahas are different, right? Like, the guy that's got a young child and just started his career, his aha over 8 hours is going to be a lot different than the guy who's getting ready to retire. And that's totally cool. And that's kind of the strength of the class, is everybody gets to take away a little bit something different, as long as they take away something. And I hope over time that this kind of raises the standard of leadership and really what we are expecting from our leaders. Because I don't know how I feel about expectations. I really struggle with these types of things. And I think it comes down to, just like we've talked about, there's a time and a place. So I'll give you an example. Me coming into a new station with new people that I've never worked with before, in a district I've never been assigned to, in a part of the county that I've never worked in a new role that I've never done, with a Marine Patrol program that I don't know anything about, and I'm supposed to give them expectations. Like, they were strumming along just fine before I got there. And so I resisted the urge to do that. What I did is I gave them bearings. I spent about 4 weeks listening and talking with them, and I sat down with some of the key players, and these key players are leaders and firefighters alike, right? These are not, and I say leaders and firefighters, meaning it could be an officer who's a leader or a firefighter's leader, but it was, I also spent time with people who were in strong followership roles, because you're not leading until somebody's with you. And so if I'm gonna challenge the leadership to go a certain direction, then I need somebody to support them, and it can't just be me all the time. And so once I got an idea of where their problems were, I said, these are my bearings. And it was about improving transparency, improving communication, improving advocacy. And none of that had anything to do with pulling a hose line. I wanted to strengthen our instructor program. I wanted to have some sort of succession plan in place so that when people got promoted or retired, we didn't have to reinvent the wheel from scratch. And I've been there I got there in August, right? So 4 months. I'm getting ready to actually do a small group meeting with all of the people I talked with 7 months later. And from there, we will collectively decide what the culture of our station looks like, when we train, when we don't, what's too much, what's too little. And then you talk about ownership and buy-in, like, it's theirs. They built it. I influenced it, but they built it. Now, fast forward a year, right? And we've built this thing together, and a new person shows up, say it's a new officer. And we sit down and I welcome him to our station. Guess what he's going to get? He's going to get some expectations, but it's definitely still not going to be, it's not going to be like, I expect you to pull a hose line, you know, every day, because we know that I can get that expectation and you won't meet it. The day might get too busy, or it just may not happen. And I don't want you to feel guilty, because once you do, you'll start inhibiting your performance. And then once you've missed it one day, you'll miss it again, and then you'll stop feeling bad. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that, right? I'm not going to give you absolutes. But what I am going to talk about is, hey, like, this is how we operate here. So you do what you think you need to do to be successful in that. These are the levels that I'll get involved at. Like, when your training falls below this, this is when I'll step in. When you're here, this is what you can expect of me, right? And so what I'm doing is I'm creating certainty about how I will react to things that he or she will do. And I will give them some certainty on how their shift will react to the things that they will or won't do. Because you've probably seen where a leader will come in and blow up a team that's performing because they tried to change the team's culture to their expectations, when that was not ever what they were sent there to do. They could have taken what was working and made it better, but instead they absolutely tanked it. So that's kind of the thing where I struggle with expectations, is once you have influenced a culture to where you want it to be, and your team is performing, then that's when you hand out expectations.
Definitely.
But when you're new, especially when you're going in as a visitor and you're not the home team, you don't do that, right? You learn the lay of the land and you learn, you know, and you kind of enjoy it and get a lot of feedback and solicit it. And then you talk about, you know, and the more you do it, the more comfortable you'll get. And even once you've gotten it there, the expectations you give are different based on who it is. You don't have to give the same expectations to a gentleman that transfers into your shift that's got 20 years on as you do these junior firefighter who just graduated rookie school. I remember doing that. And I'm going through this thing of like, and I used to have a page and a half expectations. I was so proud of those damn things. I worked so hard. And now they sit on a file somewhere that I might speak to them to give them life, but I don't read from them. And I just feel so differently about it. But I remember a part where it was, hey, when you show up here, don't be toxic. Like, don't be that toxic firefighter, you know, enjoy this job, help others to enjoy it. And thinking communication had taken place, right, that we talked about, he looked at me and he's like, what do you mean by toxic, right? Where you and I could instantly probably picture five people that are toxic and their behaviors. He just got out of rookie school. He just had 7.5 months in our agency of the best training him to be positive about everything in this job. He has no idea. But if I don't follow up on that, and next time, you know, and fast forward 6 months, he does something where he complains. And I'm like, I told you not to be toxic. And he's like, whoa, whoa, is that what this is? Like, and now I've overreacted when that was a coaching conversation.
But
it
definitely
was completely different. So, like, you know, it, like I said, it's relationships, it's emotions, it's feelings. Morale is nothing more than a feeling of how we feel about what we're being asked to do. And we take a lot of stuff away from the military, and I feel like we do it very badly. I toured, I think it was a retired aircraft carrier out in San Diego when I was at Firehouse World. I can't remember, I'm blanking on the name of it. And it was amazing, absolutely amazing. And it was one of the smaller ones. But one of the things that struck me was the fact that they had a plaque that talked about the role of the morale officer and how it had direct pipeline to the, you know, top, you know, position on that ship about how the men and women felt about what was going on. And if they got that in the 60s, why the hell can't we get that now, you know, almost 60 years later? But we don't. We hide behind rank. We hide behind hierarchy. We hide behind, oh, I'm so busy. I'm too busy for you. And our people are hurting. And I don't know if, as an example, the increased suicide rate that we're seeing has anything to do with it. I really don't, because I don't know whether it's a matter of we have more data, thus the numbers are higher because we weren't getting that data before, or it's because this really is a new problem. But I guarantee you, it may not save everybody, but if I work with Chris, and I've spent time talking with Chris about his family, and I know his kids, and he really thinks and knows in his heart of hearts that I care about him, maybe he gives me a chance to have some influence where he makes a different decision. And if you remember, that's what we talked about with leadership. It was about influence and making decisions. And that's worth it, man. If we saved one of 110, that's worth it to me to talk about this all day long. And I think you're going to see so many more side benefits of it. We just got to make it cool to talk about feelings. Because I can tell you, like, when I went through recruit school, so I've been with the fire service for 18 years now. I was told, you better leave your feelings at the door. You know, you better check them. When you come to work, you focus on work. You can't do it. Your brain can't psychologically separate. It's not two different wirings. It's not two different memories. It is when you're going through divorce, like your shift experiences that divorce because you cannot turn it off. And if that stuff is distracting you on the job, it's terrible. And if that stuff is distracting you and you're not getting the same message from my instruction or my communication or even me talking about expectations, then I'm not priming you to perform as well as I need you to. And you're automatically going to be at a B level. Even our A players are at B levels. Like when I had to experience counseling and thinking my wife was going to kick me out of the house before I really truly got this. And having had that experience and maturity now, I would totally process it differently when somebody brought me that same problem. And it doesn't mean that you have to have these experiences to be credible on them. It just means that you have to have enough compassion to consider how it might feel for somebody to go through that circumstance. And once you do, the game, like, that's a game over. You're retention will be incredible. Your turnover will be low. People will be highly engaged. People will want to come to work because they enjoy working with the leaders and teams they have. And the performance will go up as a result of that. But when people don't care, it's because they were made to feel that they shouldn't care, because they weren't either rewarded the right way, or they weren't valued the right way, or they were treated poorly. Like, we do it to ourselves, which it all comes back to that 51%. If there's a shitty situation, I've got to figure out what's the 51% of this that's my fault so I can fix it or learn from it at a minimum if I can't fix it, because you're not always going to get the chance to do it, especially when it comes to people. They call them hard feelings for a reason. They don't go away. So that's just some of the stuff. I don't even remember what the question was, but that's just kind of some of the stuff that entered my brain as we were talking about it.
Heck, man, this has been awesome. We definitely appreciate you coming here, but I think it's about time to wrap it up. And it's just been great, man. We appreciate it. Knowledge bombs like crazy.
Lots of process, lots to think about.
I hope so. Standing offer for part two, and if people reach out with feedback, they can go to my website, which is embraceresistance.com, and my contact info, my cell phone number is on there. So like, if they want to offer feedback, whether it was great or terrible, they can do it there. And thank you guys for what you're doing, because I know it's not easy, and you have to be intentional about doing what you're doing, and there is some level of risk involved to you when you put your opinions and feelings out there. So I think it's incredible, and I wish you guys the best moving forward. I hope there's a season 10.
Oh, yeah. We definitely appreciate it, man.
Holy moly. Season 10.
Season 10 of these schmucks. It's been solid, bro. It's been amazing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Awesome.
I've had lots of words because I got a lot of stuff to process.
A lot of stuff to chew on.
Yeah. But,
well, good. And like I said, in a day, you're going to feel differently. In a month, you'll feel even more differently. And then the first time something happens that we talked about, you'll really feel differently. So feel free to reach out and engage me when you do. And we can talk about any of that stuff for hours when it does. And thanks for the opportunity, Cody. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, man. And anybody wanting to get a hold of you to do, like, bring your class to their department, can reach you on your email.
Yes.
On Embrace the Resistance. And
yep. You can request a class. My email's on there. And then certainly, hopefully, when these big conferences pick back up, definitely stop by and just say hi. I love meeting people and putting faces. I am small enough that I can walk down a crowded room and nobody will know who I am. So if you don't seek me out, like, you won't know to. and I love talking to people, so it'd be fun.
Definitely, brother. Anyway, we're going to wrap this thing up, and we appreciate everybody listening and getting this message. So, as always, know your trade.
Do your job.
Do work.
Do work, guys.
See ya.